Chapter 53. Banishment, with brotherly regard, to garner up her simple faith, inviolate, and hold himself degraded, if he breathed upon it any thought that was not in her own breast when she gave it to him. Susan Nipper, who had bitten both her bonnet strings at once, and imparted a great deal of private emotion to the skylight during this transaction, now changed the subject by inquiring who took milk and who took sugar, and being enlightened on these points, poured out the tea. They all four gathered socially about the little table and took tea under that young lady's active superintendence. And the presence of Florence in the back parlor brightened the Tartar frigate on the wall. Half an hour ago Walter, for his life, would have hardly called her by her name. But he could do so now when she entreated him. He could think of her being there, without a lurking misgiving that it would have been better if she had not come. He could calmly think how beautiful she was, how full of promise, what a home some happy man would find in such a heart one day. He could reflect upon his own place in that heart, with pride, and with a brave determination, if not to deserve it, he still thought that far above him never, to deserve it less, some fairy influence must surely have hovered round the hands of Susan Nipper, when she made the tea, engendering the tranquil air that reigned in the back parlor during its discussion. Some counter-influence must surely have hovered round the hands of Uncle Sol's chronometer, and moved them faster than the Tartar frigate ever went before the wind. Be this as it may, the visitors had a coach in waiting at a quiet corner not far off, and the chronometer, on being incidentally referred to, gave such a positive opinion that it had been waiting a long time that it was impossible to doubt the fact, especially when stated on such unimpeachable authority. If Uncle Sol had been going to be hanged by his own time, he never would have allowed that the chronometer was too fast by the least fraction of a second. Florence at parting recapitulated to the old man all that she had said before, and bound him to the compact. Uncle Sol attended her lovingly to the legs of the wooden midshipman, and there resigned her to Walter, who was ready to escort her, and Susan Nipper to the coach. "Walter," apostrophe said Florence, "by the way, I have been afraid to ask before your uncle. Do you think you will be absent very long?" Apostrophe, "indeed, apostrophe," said Walter, "I don't know. I fear so. Mr. Dombey signified as much, I thought, when he appointed me." Apostrophe, "is it a favor, Walter?" Apostrophe inquired Florence, after a moment's hesitation, and looking anxiously in his face. "The appointment?" Apostrophe returned Walter. "Yes." Apostrophe, Walter would have given anything to have answered in the affirmative, but his face answered before his lips could, and Florence was too attentive to it, not to understand its reply. "I am afraid you have scarcely been a favorite with Papa," apostrophe she said, timidly. "There is no reason," apostrophe replied Walter, smiling, "why I should be." Apostrophe, "no reason, Walter." Apostrophe, "there was no reason," apostrophe said Walter, understanding what she meant. "There are many people employed in the house. Between Mr. Dombey and a young man like me, there's a wide space of separation. If I do my duty, I do what I ought, and do no more than all the rest." Apostrophe, had Florence any misgiving of which she was hardly conscious? Any misgiving that had sprung into an indistinct and undefined existence since that recent night when she had gone down to her father's room, that Walter's accidental interest in her and early knowledge of her might have involved him in that powerful displeasure and dislike? Had Walter any such idea or any sudden thought that it was in her mind at that moment? Neither of them hinted at it. Neither of them spoke at all for some short time. Susan, walking on the other side of Walter, eyed them both sharply, and certainly Miss Nipper's thoughts traveled in that direction, and very confidently too. "You may come back very soon," apostrophe said Florence, "perhaps, Walter." Apostrophe, "I may come back," apostrophe said Walter, "an old man, and find you an old lady. but I hope for better things. Apostrophe, Papa, apostrophe, said Florence. After a moment, Will will recover from his grief, and speak more freely to me one day, perhaps. And if he should, I will tell him how much I wish to see you back again, and ask him to recall you for my sake. Apostrophe, there was a touching modulation in these words about her father that Walter understood too well. The coach being close at hand, he would have left her without speaking, for now he felt what parting was. But Florence held his hand when she was seated, and then he found there was a little packet in her own. Walter, apostrophe, she said, looking full upon him with her affectionate eyes, like you, I hope for better things. I will pray for them, and believe that they will arrive. I made this little gift for Paul. Pray take it with my love, and do not look at it until you are gone away. And now, God bless you, Walter. Never forget me. You are my brother, dear. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he was glad that Susan Nipper came between them, or he might have left her with a sorrowful remembrance of him. He was glad, too, that she did not look out of the coach again, but waved the little hand to him instead, as long as he could see it. In spite of her request, he could not help opening the packet that night when he went to bed. It was a little purse, and there was money in it. Bright rose the sun next morning, from his absence in strange countries, and up rose Walter with it to receive the captain, who was already at the door. Having turned out earlier than was necessary, in order to get under way, while Mrs. McStinger was still slumbering, the captain pretended to be in tip-top spirits, and brought a very smoky tongue in one of the pockets of the broad blue coat for breakfast. And, Waller, apostrophe, said the captain, when they took their seats at table, if your uncle's the man I think him, he'll bring out the last bottle of the Madeira on the present occasion. Apostrophe, no, no, Ned, apostrophe, returned the old man. No. That shall be opened when Walter comes home again. Apostrophe, well said. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the captain. Hear him. Apostrophe, there it lies, apostrophe, said Sol Gills, down in the little cellar, covered with dirt and cobwebs. There may be dirt and cobwebs over you and me perhaps, Ned, before it sees the light. Apostrophe, hear him, cried the captain. Good morality. Waller, my lad, train up a fig tree in the way it should go, and when you are old sit under the shade on it. Overhaul the well, apostrophe, said the captain on second thoughts. I ain't quite certain where that's to be found, but when found, make a note of. Sol Gills, heave ahead again. Apostrophe, but there somewhere, it shall lie, Ned, until Wally comes back to claim it, apostrophe, said the old man. That's all I meant to say. Apostrophe, and well said too, apostrophe, returned the captain. And if we three don't crack that bottle in company, I'll give you two leave to. Apostrophe, notwithstanding the captain's excessive joviality, he made but a poor hand at the smoky tongue, though he tried very hard, when anybody looked at him, to appear as if he were eating with a vast appetite. He was terribly afraid, likewise, of being left alone with either uncle or nephew, appearing to consider that his only chance of safety, as to keeping up appearances, was in there being always three together. This terror on the part of the captain reduced him to such ingenious evasions as running to the door when Solomon went to put his coat on, under pretense of having seen an extraordinary hackney coach pass, and darting out into the road when Walter went upstairs to take leave of the lodgers, on a feint of smelling fire in a neighboring chimney. These artifices Captain Cuttle deemed inscrutable by any uninspired observer. Walter was coming down from his parting expedition upstairs, and was crossing the shop to go back to the little parlor, when he saw a faded face he knew, looking in at the door, and darted towards it. Mr. Carker! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Walter, pressing the hand of John Carker the Jr. Pray come in. This is kind of you, to be here so early to say goodbye to me. You knew how glad it would make me to shake hands with you, once, before going away. I cannot say how glad I am to have this opportunity. Pray come in. It is not likely that we may ever meet again, Walter, returned the other, gently resisting his invitation, and I am glad of this opportunity to. I may venture to speak to you, and to take you by the hand, on the eve of separation. I shall not have to resist your frank approaches, Walter, anymore. There was a melancholy in his smile as he said it, that showed he had found some company and friendship for his thoughts even in that. Ah, Mr. Carker! Returned Walter. Why did you resist him? You could have done me nothing but good, I am very sure. He shook his head. If there were any good, he said, I could do on this earth, I would do it, Walter, for you. The sight of you from day to day has been at once happiness and remorse to me. But the pleasure has outweighed the pain. I know that now, by knowing what I lose. Come in, Mr. Carker, and make acquaintance with my good old uncle, urged Walter. I have often talked to him about you, and he will be glad to tell you all he hears from me. I have not, said Walter, noticing his hesitation, and speaking with embarrassment himself. I have not told him anything about our last conversation, Mr. Carker, not even him, believe me. The great junior pressed his hand, and tears rose in his eyes. If I ever make acquaintance with him, Walter, he returned, it will be that I may hear tidings of you. Rely on my not wronging your forbearance and consideration. It would be to wrong it, not to tell him all the truth, before I sought a word of confidence from him. But I have no friend or acquaintance except you. And even for your sake, I'm little likely to make any. I wish, said Walter, you had suffered me to be your friend indeed. I always wished it, Mr. Carker, as you know. But never half, so much as now, when we are going to part, it is enough, replied the other, that you have been the friend of my own breast, and that when I have avoided you most, my heart inclined the most towards you, and was fullest of you. Walter, goodbye. Goodbye, Mr. Carker. Heaven be with you, sir. Cried Walter with emotion. If, said the other, retaining his hand while he spoke, if when you come back, you miss me from my old corner, and should hear from anyone where I am lying, come and look upon my grave. Think that I might have been as honest, and as happy as you. And let me think, when I know time is coming on, that someone like my former self may stand there, for a moment, and remember me with pity and forgiveness. Walter, goodbye. His figure crept like a shadow down the bright, sunlighted street, so cheerful yet so solemn in the early summer morning, and slowly passed away. The relentless chronometer at last announced that Walter must turn his back upon the wooden midshipman. And away they went, himself, his uncle, and the captain, in a hackney coach to a wharf, where they were to take steamboat for some reach down the river, the name of which, as the captain gave it out, was a hopeless mystery to the ears of landsmen. Arrived at this reach, whither the ship had repaired by last night's tide, they were boarded by various excited watermen, and among others by a dirty cyclops of the captain's acquaintance, who, with his one eye, had made the captain out some mile and a half off, and had been exchanging unintelligible roars with him ever since. Becoming the lawful prize of this personage, who was frightfully hoarse, and constitutionally in want of shaving, they were all three put aboard the Sun and Air. And the Sun and Air was in a pretty state of confusion, with sails lying all bedraggled on the wet decks, loose ropes tripping people up, men in red shirts running barefoot to and fro, casks blockading every foot of space, and, in the thickest of the fray, a black cook in a black caboose up to his eyes in vegetables and blinded with smoke. The captain immediately drew Walter into a corner, and with a great effort, that made his face very red, pulled up the silver watch, which was so big, and so tight in his pocket, that it came out like a bung. Waller, apostrophe, said the captain, handing it over, and shaking him heartily by the hand. A parting gift, my lad. Put it back half an hour every morning, and about another quarter towards the afternoon, and it's a watch that'll do you credit. Apostrophe, Captain Cuttle. I couldn't think of it. Apostrophe, cried Walter, detaining him, for he was running away. Pray take it back. I have one already. Apostrophe, then, Waller, apostrophe, said the captain, suddenly diving into one of his pockets, and bringing up the 2 teaspoons and the sugar tongs, with which he had armed himself to meet such an objection. Take this here trifle of plate, instead. Apostrophe, no, no, I couldn't indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Walter, 1,000 thanks. Don't throw them away, Captain Cuttle. Apostrophe, apostrophe, for the captain was about to jerk them overboard. They'll be of much more use to you than me. Give me your stick. I have often thought I should like to have it. There. Goodbye, Captain Cuttle. Take care of my uncle. Uncle Soul, God bless you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, they were over the side in the confusion, before Walter caught another glimpse of either. And when he ran up to the stern, and looked after them, he saw his uncle hanging down his head in the boat, and Captain Cuttle rapping him on the back with the great silver watch. It must have been very painful, and gesticulating hopefully with the teaspoons and sugar tongs. Catching sight of Walter, Captain Cuttle dropped the property into the bottom of the boat with perfect unconcern, being evidently oblivious of its existence, and pulling off the glazed hat hailed him lustily. The glazed hat made quite a show in the sun with its glistening, and the captain continued to wave it until he could be seen no longer. Then the confusion on board, which had been rapidly increasing, reached its height. 2 or 3 other boats went away with a cheer. The sails shone bright and full above, as Walter watched them spread their surface to the favorable breeze. The water flew in sparkles from the prow, and off upon her voyage went the Sun and Air, as hopefully and trippingly as many another Sun and Air, gone down, had started on his way before her. Day after day, Old Soul and Captain Cuttle kept her reckoning in the little hack parlor and worked out her course, with the chart spread before them on the round table. At night, when Old Soul climbed upstairs, so lonely, to the attic where it sometimes blew great guns, he looked up at the stars and listened to the wind, and kept a longer watch than would have fallen to his lot on board the ship. The last bottle of the old Madeira, which had had its cruising days, and known its dangers of the deep, lay silently beneath its dust and cobwebs, in the meanwhile, undisturbed. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.